time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Got to remember the reason for the season, Pat. The reason for the season. I don't know. I'm over my skis. Where are my pastors? Where are my Presbyterians? Somebody help me.
SI's Russ Gellinger.
Maybe everything does shift up. Conference championship games. Maybe they go to Thanksgiving and your rivalry weekend moves up. Everything moves up. And then semifinals maybe are on New Year's Eve day. The commissioners are trying to prevent from going too deep in January.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Now what we have here is the chess version of Nick Saban saying that Jimbo Fisher bought his recruiting class, and now Jimbo is Roy Delfino firing back saying, prove it, big boy.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And before we do our obligatory pour one out for another coach who got fired, kind of knew he was going to get fired, but we didn't care enough to hold the show on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll try to be more caring, Georgia Tech. Sorry.
Yeah, we're like, we can wait on that. Jeff Collins fired at Georgia Tech. Before that, I want to thank everyone who has been listening, sharing us on social media, subscribing, telling your friends about us, all the other things I implore you to do. We're in the midst of another record month, and the pod is doing great, and we need all the help we can get. So if you enjoy listening to the show and you want to keep it going, we need listeners. The show is free. We ask nothing.
So, yep. Just subscribe and click. That's it.
Subscribe and click and get someone else to subscribe. So yep. We have a good time doing it. We like it. We want to keep doing it. And it seems that at least some of you are either listening or hate listening. I think it's the UMass bump. It's the UMass football bump.
It's all the followers, all the listeners I brought over. Come on now.
It's Ross. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You amped up the sex appeal. The sex appeal.
Younger, better looking, and probably less of a jerk than the rest of us.
Yeah, yeah. All right. They just want that. They're like, Matthew McConaughey's got a college football pod. Listen to this guy.
What is that? I've had multiple people reach out.
You just did it. What is that?
What is that? Come on, man. I don't sound like Matthew McConaughey.
You are not the minister of culture on this podcast. I retain that. We've got some good stories later, too, so buckle up. But maybe listening, I believe he listened before, but he certainly got the free time now. Jeff Collins. That's the way to keep a listener. Sorry, Jeff. Fired at Georgia Tech. Went 10-28. He'd done well at Temple. I thought he was a good defensive coordinator. Temple looked solid. Why not? 3-9, 3-7, 3-9, 1-3. Just never got liftoff at all. Just nothing really. Seventh in the Coastal, 12th overall. They didn't do Coastals and Mountains or whatever their little thing is in the ACC. And then the sixth in the
Coastal and Atlantic. Atlantic Coast.
Atlantic Coast. Oh, that's right. That's right. The mountain and west. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. The unimaginative. Anyway, Georgia Tech is open. Who should take this job and what kind of job is this? Obviously the academic requirements to get in are tough. Transfers are almost impossible, which seem like you better have at this level because you're not signing a bunch of five stars. However, right there in Atlanta. So they've been... They've had their moments. So, Pat, I'll start with you on this one.
Yeah, Georgia Tech. Isn't it incredible to believe they won a share of a national championship in 1990? I mean, seems like inconceivable, but they actually did. And then Colorado won the other half of that title. Yeah. That was an odd year. Let's say that. First, you know what? On paper, the hire of Jeff Collins looked like it had a chance. Probably everyone underestimated the difficulty of the complete remake from the Paul Johnson option system. Everybody said, it'll take a couple of years. Well, it's taken more than that. And they maybe should have gone with another offensive guy to steer that through perhaps a little bit more cleanly of like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. And these are the players we're going to use. And this is how it's going to work to totally revamp an option attack. As you mentioned, Dan, it's an intriguing but kind of conflicting job because you're sitting on an absolute goldmine of talent, but can you get the talent in school? And I was just thinking as you were saying it about the transfer situation. Think what are three schools, academic heavyweight schools, that have had some success but are really struggling right now in the transfer era? Stanford, Northwestern, Georgia Tech. I know they've had a lot of people transfer out. I wonder if it's partly a difficulty of having players transfer in and you're just losing experienced talent and not being able to replace that.
Not able to replace.
Yeah.
You might throw Boston College in there.
Yeah.
That might be a reason for BC struggles. I don't know.
Yep.
The transfer portal's half the game now.
Right. It's something to look into. As far as who can look, we've talked about on this podcast. I mean, the Deion Sanders element is really intriguing. Goodness knows he's got history and cachet in Atlanta. I think he would absolutely destroy recruiting there, but you got to be able to get kids into school, and you're dealing with a place that athletics doesn't wag the tail. There's the tail that does not wag the dog at Georgia Tech, and you know, that could be a problem for him. He probably needs to be more at a place where they're just going to say, carte blanche, Deion, do your thing. And that's not going to be Georgia Tech.
Yeah, Deion, it's going to be hard for Deion to go somewhere where he's going to be told no a lot. And I think Georgia Tech would be a place where he's told no quite a bit. In all the things you guys have talked about, the academic requirements of getting people in, the transfer situation, just the overall, you know, resources. I mean, they've just talking to some administrators, a few of them kind of sort of interested in the Georgia Tech job. They say they're the debt service at Georgia Tech for facilities, basically facilities debt, is pretty overwhelming. It's a pretty big bear to get your hands around. Georgia Tech, like so many other places, kind of has to decide, right? Like, are we going to go all in here on football? Or are we going to invest significantly in football, kind of like Miami, you know, is doing, although it's not working out well lately for them. But, you know, are they going to go all in or what? And that's kind of the decision they have to make. And that includes not just spending with resources and things like that, but also in getting players in and, you know, all that. And I just don't, you know, Deion fits in Atlanta. I don't know if Deion fits at Georgia Tech. But there's certainly a long list of coaches who would want that job. If you look back on the history, I think for about 17, 16 years in a row, Georgia Tech made a bowl game, 97 through 2014, it looks like. I mean, they made a bowl game every single year. They won their division like four times. They won the conference twice over that stretch. They won at least 10 games three times over that stretch. Like, you can win there, and it's been proven, and you can win in a variety of ways running really weird different offenses. So there shouldn't be a shortage of really strong candidates for the job. I just, you know, everybody's talking a lot about Deion, and I'm not sure that Deion would go to a place that has some restrictions.
He can do better. And how about this? Do you want to be the AD? You may sit there and say, Deion Sanders is the coach. This is the best guy I can get. But you know you're going to have to tell him no. You want to tell Deion Sanders no? Like, if you're the AD, seriously, like, he's too big to be like, yeah, we can't do that. So he can do better than this. I know he interviewed at TCU, which is a similar kind of situation, but that's back in Dallas. I don't know. We'll see. He's trying to go undefeated at Jackson State this year, and he very well might. They've never gone undefeated in school history. He's got a great situation. I just think he can wait and do better. It's not like he's worried they're going to fall off.
So, well, he fits better too. We've talked about this before. Out in Phoenix, more than probably
know,
Georgia Tech, Arizona State, and you know, Arizona State's in a situation where you think that they will go all in, more all in on football than Georgia Tech. I'm just kind of assuming that they will try to spend a little more, and they will be saying a lot more yeses, you know, to somebody like Deion than no's.
Yeah, I like Arizona State better for him. I wrote a call about that. I mean, look, you got Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina. If you're just looking around, I don't know if that interests him or not. he's obviously had enormous success. I think he's on a 26-3 run. I mean, you know, there's some coordinators, obviously, Bill O'Brien, Todd Monken at Georgia, the offensive coordinator. His cousin Jeff Monken is up at Army. You know, there's some different guys that could that'll take it. They'll get a coach and they'll get a plan. I just think because of the academic requirements, and once you're in, trying to get someone to transfer in, so hard because your game plan would be, look, I'm going to recruit Atlanta, but I'm going to lose half my recruits, if not more, but I'm going to get some of them back. So you go off to wherever you want to go play somewhere else because you're too good for Georgia Tech, but you come back and now I'm the local school with a nice little option for you. But I don't know. We'll see what comes of that.
I will say just Ross and I's colleague Richard Johnson wrote a good column on the Georgia Tech job today, and saying, you know, Georgia Tech has tried to be, you know, kind of Atlanta's team and embrace the culture of Atlanta, which some people have referred to as, you know, the black nation's capital of America. It's a city with a really vibrant black culture there. And so he said they should be looking, at least considering, black head coaches or black coaches to replace. They haven't had one to replace Jeff Collins. He mentioned Charles Huff at Marshall, former Saban assistant. I went up there a couple of weeks ago. I was super impressed with him. They had just beaten Notre Dame. Of course, since then, they have lost to Bowling Green and Troy. Bowling Green and Troy. Mentioned Florida State assistant Alex Atkins, Miami assistant Josh Gattis, who Gattis has recruited like crazy in the South. He's done good work at Alabama, at Michigan. He's now at Miami. And then also Ryan Walters, the defensive coordinator at Illinois. That's a guy who I think is a rising star in the profession. That's a good unit that he's got going at Illinois. So there's some options out there if Georgia Tech is interested in trying to diversify its coaching hires from its past.
Well, they should certainly look for that, or whoever's, I mean, they don't have the connection to the city the way like Miami does to Miami.
Right.
Miami is a private school and academically competitive and all of that. And it's way down in South Miami and Coral Gables. Yet it has it represents the U represents the city. I don't know a whole lot of Atlanta people going, yeah, how about that Georgia Tech? So there is a lot of work to be done there, and that's certainly an opportunity, right?
So yeah.
Whether, you know, however you do that, I would go with. All right, Ross, you are up in Chicago at the playoff meetings, the latest playoff meetings. We are not expecting an announcement that they've done what they were told today.
No.
are they going to blow it anyway? Sometimes I tell my kids to clean the room and then I go by and it's not. So I don't know how that's going to work. Pat, I'm sure you never had that problem. what are we getting out of Chicago here? What are we getting out of this meeting?
Yeah, the CFP commissioners in Jacksonville, the 11 of them, are meeting most of the day Tuesday afternoon, evening, and then they're supposed to restart meetings for a couple hours Wednesday morning before a separate meeting with all the Division I commissioners meet. The commissioners, Conference Commissioners Association, CCA. It's like 32 Division I commissioners meet, and that's Wednesday afternoon and Thursday morning. But I don't expect a lot of news. I think what they're the big focus, first of all, the focus right now is on getting this thing started early in 24-25, and they're treating that separately than the 26 and beyond. So they're treating those 2 years kind of separately to try to get those done. And the first thing they need to do is the calendar. And that's the big thing, is when to play the games, you know, how to structure the games, when to play the first round, the quarters, the semis, and, of course, the championship game. So that, I think, probably Wednesday morning, we'll have a better idea on when those games will be played. They're going to take those proposed dates. Probably the next step is to bring it to the network, bring it to ESPN. Hey, you know, do you have space for these? What do you think about this? Here's what we're thinking, you know. Give us some feedback, whatever. So they got to get the dates nailed down a little bit. And I think that's kind of the most important thing we'll probably come away with. But I don't think we'll have any final decisions until their October meeting. I think that's kind of the deadline, the October 20th meeting. It's in Dallas. And I think that's the deadline kind of okay, we're going to expand early or we're not going to expand early.
So I think what everyone wants to know is, like, what are the chances it starts early?
Yeah.
Or starts late, but early.
Well, you know, the earliest it could start is 24, the 24 season. There's a lot of confusion about that, by the way. So it'd be the 2025 championship game, January 2025, but it would be for the 2024 season. So yeah. It'd be
one
two
more way
seasons
they can
from
confuse
now.
Us. You know? One more way. When the hell is this starting, Ross? When are we getting the playoff? Somebody tell me.
So I think it's going to start in 24. I think they're going to do everything they can to start this thing in 24. I think the big hang up though is the calendar, but I'm not sold on it. It's not like 100%. It's not even like 80%. I mean, it's like, feels like a 50-50, 60-40 thing to me. But I think they get it done in 24, but there are a lot of hurdles. I mean, the calendar is the top hurdle of fitting in everything around the bowls and around the TV. And a lot of it is going to have to do with TV. You know, ESPN controls the rights to 24 and 25. They control those TV rights. You would think that ESPN wants all of those games. It's 11 games, though. You would think ESPN wants all those games. Will ESPN be flexible on cutting off and letting another entity take some of the games? I don't know. It's kind of hard to see that happening. But, you know, and I wrote this a couple weeks ago from their first meetings in Dallas about this, and it is, we got to all prepare for weeknight playoff games. That's almost certain going to happen. It's to avoid the NFL games. You know, mid-late December, the NFL starts to play on Saturdays. And it's hard to – you don't want to compete with them, and it's hard to have four first-round games on one day anyway. So there's been a little rumbling, right, that you might have a game on Wednesday night, game on Thursday night, game on Friday night, game on Saturday before the NFL games, or two games on – or a game on Thursday, Friday, and two games on Saturday. We're going to have some weeknight situation playoff games. We got to be prepared for that.
I'm fine with that. I mean, yeah. You know, especially because at that point, the academic calendar will be over for the semester. I am the crank who keeps bringing up academics around here. But, you know, theoretically, good. I like weeknight football in December. We watch bowl games all the time during that stretch.
Let's
get those quarterfinals. It's get the first round and the quarterfinals in there wherever we need to and make it happen.
I mean, to me, like a Friday night game would just be like amazing.
It'd be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, especially
I think we can. Yeah. I mean, I think it's certain.
You can easily do four games a weekend with Friday and the Saturdays. I also think, you know, I don't know. I'd have to do more research on this. But you can fight the NFL a little bit with a playoff game. And the NFL will seed the early window on Saturday. I mean, they kind of grab that Saturday because they can.
Because they can, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got to look into that more. But if you're putting a quarterfinal game, the NFL does not want that. Like, they want huge numbers and they don't need the competition.
Yeah.
And so
if it's a week 17 or 16 NFL game that, you know, some of them may matter, but a lot of them do. But still, going up against a playoff quarterfinal?
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. One thing I would love, and I know this wouldn't, they'll never do this because of the value, is you want, you know, your games to stack up. But like a Saturday where they had your four games and you had one go at like noon, then two, and then like, well, I don't know. Like you could start while one's finishing. Let me put it that way. So it just rolls, kind of like the NCAA basketball tournament.
Yeah. Mm.
Except for that weird, awkward time when like they still bring in the Price is Right or something or whatever. Like, you ever seen that? You're watching. You're like, where's the game? And it's like, we gotta have Jeopardy or something. And they're like, wait, put the game back on. I don't know what the show is.
But True we've been talking TV. A lot about the first round games, but quarters in the semi—that's another decision. And one of the commissioners brought it up to me a couple of days ago is he asked the question, do we want the quarters on New Year's Eve Day weekend, or do you want the semifinals on New Year's Day weekend? And in order for you to have the semifinals there, right, the whole schedule would have to shift up, which is, right, another whole topic entirely is moving week one to week zero, which we wrote about a little bit last week and got the new 365-day calendar, proposed calendar, that's kind of out there. Now, the proposed calendar, I'm told, that stuff and the potential of moving week one to week zero and having the playoff semifinals on New Year's Day Eve, that's for 2026 and beyond. I don't expect that to happen in 24 and 25. It's so soon. So you're going to have a different looking, if they do expand early in 24, 25, you're going to have a different looking playoff in 24, 25, the schedule and everything compared to maybe 2026 and beyond. You're going to have a different revenue distribution too. The revenue distribution, which a lot of fans probably don't care about, but it's how the revenue of the playoff is split among the conferences. You're going to have that be probably similar to how it is now if they expand early in 24, 25 and separate in 26. So 26 and beyond, maybe everything does shift up. Conference championship games, maybe they go to Thanksgiving and your rivalry weekend moves up. Everything moves up. And then semifinals maybe are on New Year's Eve day. The commissioners are trying to prevent from going too deep in January. That's kind of the bottom line here.
I'm good with that. I would rather the semis are the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl. Well, I'd prefer they be on campus, but if we're going to do it, Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl, semis at their normal times.
Yeah, that's fine.
You've got it laid up. All your other
the
guys
Rose Bowl would be very happy about that.
Yeah, well, they should have made that deal a long time ago instead of risking it. But that's your semifinals. It's New Year's Day is college football's day. Let's do this.
Yeah, and seize it.
No more New Year's Eve games. That's the divorce maker. We don't need that. You guys were trying to screw with us.
I will never forget Bill Hancock standing there saying, we're going to remake New Year's Eve in America. No, you're not.
I will say some would argue that we should have the quarterfinals on New Year's Day weekend because you have four games instead of two. So
you can go all day. You can put the games around it. You put the other games anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
You can have a bunch of games at 1 o'clock, noon, whatever. But by the time the Rose Bowl has an exclusive window, everything's done. Let's go. And so, you know, hey, if the annual Iowa trip to Tampa for the Outback Bowl or whatever we're calling it now against Auburn, that let's do that.
Now, I there's something floating around. I've heard from a few people that at least if they're going to expand early in 24, 25 – again, taking that separately from 26 and beyond, that in 24 and 25, if they do expand early there, you'll have maybe even a triple header of quarterfinals on New Year's Day, and maybe you have one on New Year's Eve.
That'd be good.
That's kind of a thought. And I think that would be pretty cool too, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's what we got to do, that's what we got to do. I mean, look, it's not a big deal for the real hardcore fan, but it's just – it adds a, like – just makes it, it just adds a reason not to watch the game. Adds a considerable one if you look at the ratings.
You're talking about New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve. I'm sorry.
Well, they've even talked about New Year's Day sitting there.
And like, you know, what was last year? Ohio State, Utah. That was a great game, but it got a higher rating or an equal rating to the playoff games.
Yeah.
People are like, hey, I'm home. It's New Year's Day. It's 5 o'clock. It's whatever. I want to watch the game. I want to watch football. And don't, you have this unbelievable thing. Don't get rid of it.
Right.
So I would put the semis there. Week zero part. So this would be a big thing. It would basically start college football the week before Labor Day, where it currently starts. Now it is hotter. It's 1 week hotter. Everything starts earlier. I don't have a problem with that, though. It also gives you 2 full weeks to get your season cranking before the NFL.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. And the NFL is sitting there playing these stupid preseason games. And there's this big window where you can kind of grab some narrative. I mean, they did a great job this year with a great opening week. Now you get two. Does it change things for some fans? Sure. But I have no problem with it. And it's generally either not during the season, during the school year, it's preschool year, or it's early on. So I don't know. What do you think of that? Week zero.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a decent solution. You're right. It will inconvenience fans probably to the extent that it will hurt attendance a little bit. Maybe not significantly, but you're going to have fans are just going to say, no way, it's too hot, too stormy. You know, you get a lot of lightning and stuff like that at that time of year. And then also it's going to be before a lot of schools start school. You know, I mean, you've already got some quarter system universities that start later, but you're probably encroaching there where you may not have all your students on campus. So you may take a little bit of a hit at the gate, but probably not significant enough that you would, you know, say stop the whole process on account of we're 5,000 tickets shorter than we normally would be or something like that for a season opener. I think fans, for the most part, are very much ready for football by week zero. So give it to them in mass quantities as opposed to just a couple of games here and there. To me, guys, the more significant issue, at least for people to adjust to, would be moving the rivalry games off Thanksgiving weekend.
Yep.
Because that is one of the great things about college football. And, you know, I don't want to be a maudlin sentimental traditionalist, but the idea of turning on the TV for the Egg Bowl Thanksgiving night, and even for Nebraska, Iowa, and Missouri, Arkansas on Friday, and Central Florida, USF, and then the Saturday lineup of Ohio State, Michigan, Iron Bowl, USC, Notre Dame is really an awesome
weekend.
Used
to be a week earlier. They used to be.
Yeah. Well, you took the words out of my mouth, Pat. I hate to be a traditionalist, but I would be upset at that. I would. I mean, I grew up, you know, going to the Egg Bowl on Thanksgiving night and going to LSU Arkansas games on Black Friday. That's just like when those seem like they should happen. And then watching the Iron Bowl on Saturday. You know, it was the Thursday, Friday, Saturday smorgasbord of SEC football that I grew up watching. And I'd hate for now those games to turn into just what, six games, championship games or whatever, 10 or 8 to 10, you know, championship games. Over that weekend. I don't know. That is the big one. You're right. And that's why some people, when I put that calendar out last week, I got a lot of feedback of it doesn't necessarily mean everything moves up a week. Maybe you give an extra bye during the season. So maybe everything doesn't move up. And I don't know. I get the feeling that eventually everything's going to move up. But
so all right, let me look at this. Okay, so I'm looking at 2023. Okay. What are we going to even do this year? I'll look at 2022. Like, there's room in there. It's tricky. I like that. I love the Thanksgiving smorgasbord, but the games were a week ahead before.
Yeah. I'm looking up
the Saturday before
Michigan.
Thanksgiving. Ohio State, Michigan, noon. Yeah. Let's play. So now you do this. So the playoff, that weekend now is the 26th, because 24th is Thanksgiving. It's a little early this year, but whatever. Then you have your championship weekend, which is fun, and you got that whole week to hype that. They want to take 2 weeks off for logistics and all of that, right?
12 days, between championship games and the first round, right? And
you got to watch Army Navy. Then you go to the 16th, 17th, and you play your four games, one on Friday night, three on Saturday. Or something like that. Maybe you do Thursday, Friday, two on
you
Saturday.
You do 15, you might do, right. And one of the talks is you might do one game a day starting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Well, there's a Thursday NFL game too, though. So you're going up against somebody. You got the NFL everywhere.
It was mentioned it's to me Amazon. That Thursday night game's on Amazon now. Yes.
Right.
And that kind of changes the dynamic. Maybe ESPN is okay with going against an Amazon.
It's a different. And at some point, you just got to stand up and be like, they took on New Year's Eve. I mean, when it meant protecting the bowls, they were like, we'll take on New Year's Eve, which, I mean, the NFL is quite a force in America, but it's not New Year's Eve.
Right.
And then the next weekend, next weekend's Christmas. So you'd probably have almost.
You could do it.
You can. You could go back to back to back to back, but there are certain conferences. The ACC, who does not want to do that. They don't want players playing, you know, a conference championship game 1 week off and then 3 straight weekends. But You could fit it all in and have the semis on New Year's Day without even moving up the season. Sports
on Christmas. It's a once in a lifetime chance. It's eight teams, and there's already bowl games on Christmas. There's bowl games on the 23rd, the 24th, the 26th. And they play that Detroit the Quick Lane Bowl at like noon on the 26th.
Yes, well, think about it, it's only a small amount of teams playing these play. Every round of the playoff, you have teams eliminated. So
yeah,
it's only fewer. Right. I mean,
Will God forgive us? That's the question.
I mean, you'll
we
have
should have a lot of watch.
Look, it's we have son's a lot of birthday.
We have a lot of
his son's
and-
birthday. You need something to watch. It's an exciting day. What better way to honor?
Now, I will say the TV networks get crazy around Christmas, right? You have NBA and you have NFL. Now you have NFL games on Christmas Day, right? Won't we have a couple on Christmas Day?
Like three of them.
Right,
yeah,
so that's a problem with the networks and spacing.
Yeah, you take them on. That's ABC. It's all day ABC and TNT.
Look, we have a lot of clergy, religious pastors that for some reason listen to this podcast. We'll see if we can get them to put the issue in front of the Almighty and ask him what he would think about it.
Look, I think if you've got a kid and you can be like, hey, man, your birthday's whatever. Hey, guess what? This year, the Super Bowl's on your birthday. Or, you know, your favorite team is playing a playoff game on your birthday. That's a good thing. So on occasion...
on Jesus's birthday.
You got to remember the reason for the season, Pat. The reason for the season.
Yes, we do. It's not football.
I'm over my skis. Where are my pastors? Where are my Presbyterians? Somebody help me. I'm going to get torched on this.
Lutherans, Presbyterians, Catholics, we'll take input from all y'all.
I can tell you that as a Boston Catholic, let's play football. Let's go. Let's go. There's nothing to do after you unwrap the presents. I want to watch some games.
Look, they already played.
I don't want to hear the damn, the Christmas. What the hell is the Quick Lane Bowl? Is that like the atheist bowl or something? The agnostics are allowed only or something? Come on.
Hey, I've had to cover the Quick Lane Bowl back when it was the Motor City Bowl the day after Christmas. I was not pleased getting on that airplane at 6 a.m. December 26th to go up there for...
cry me a river.
Louisville Marshall.
I think it's the Little Caesars Bowl now.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Let's see here. Ole Miss played in the thing. They're not religious down there. Let's see. Boston College played on 2002, the 26th of December. Huh?
There you go.
That's a religious school. Any others? No.
No.
A lot of heathen.
A lot of Central Michigan
versus Western Kentucky. Yeah. Pitt versus Bowling Green. Boy, these are some tough games. Actually, good games. Look, that was a run when it was the Little Caesars. There was a run of Little Caesars, seven straight one-score games. Wikipedia for the Motor City Bowl just gave up. It doesn't have the...
it should.
Those people generally...
So should we. Let's move on. We don't need the history of the Motor City Bowl here.
I'm just saying.
Hey, We were looking at the
Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball.
we were looking at the 22 calendar. You know, you look at it, and you mentioned Dan 22 Christmas calendar. Thanksgiving is really really early this year. 24, it's really really late. So if you look at the 24 calendar, you wouldn't play on Christmas. It's in the middle of the week the way it's set up. So you would have to play the quarterfinals on New Year's Day, New Year's Eve. And it sets up where you would go championship games on December 7th. You'd have the break. And then December 18th through 21st would be your first round. Then you'd have like another 10 to 12 day break in the 31st of December, January 1. You'd have your quarterfinals. And then again, a week and a half break, semis, 10th and 11th. And then they don't want just a week between the semis and the championship game. And so your championship game would be moved all the way back to January 20th, which I believe in the NFL's new playoff, because they expanded too, that might be the Monday night of the wild card game too. So there's that well. It gets really complicated.
Can I also...
Good thing they have 45 meetings scheduled to work on.
Also would be impressive, and you would get to trample across... Final exams at the end of the fall semester and the start of the spring semester.
already did that. They already did that.
Oh, and Dan, I just want your personal opinion on what you think about bowl season, wanting or requesting that the bowls host first round games instead of them being played on campus.
Gee, I wonder what I would think of that.
That was the ultimate softball tee up right there.
It's not even necessary. It's just a dumb idea. I don't blame Nick Caporelli and the bowl people for trying. I try.
He's fighting for his bowls.
It's just, come on. This is terrible.
I mean, there's more people I hear from wanting the second round, which is slotted to be in bowls, the quarterfinals slotted to be in bowls, to be on campus. There's a lot of ADs. There's a lot of ADs in the SEC that want quarterfinals on campus.
Every AD I talk to, now granted, if they said otherwise, they know they're going to get yelled at, so they probably just don't bring it up, right? It's just like avoiding the topic when they want the second round. Look, this is what's going to happen. They're going to do one. There's enough AD. There's enough bed coaches. There's enough bowl momentum. All of that. Part of it is these coaches just want neutral games. They're scared of playing. The fear of ever going on the road is enough to give up their own home advantage. But once they see that scene of home playoff games the first round, they're going to want to expand it. It'll happen in the next round, and the recruiting advantage.
Yeah,
you can get guys host, are making final decisions, and you got
potentially.
And hosting prospects, but they'll try to ban that. But I don't know how you stop people from showing up on your campus that weekend.
That's the way to get the coaches on board. Absolutely. We get to host prospects. Oh, wow. And that was specific in that 365-day calendar, moving week one to week zero. It specifically noted that schools can host prospects on that week one, you know, if you move up the calendar. So it's just another time to be recruiting.
There you go.
Yeah, and even if it's not official visits or whatever,
they're still there.
If you're trying to recruit somebody from Mississippi, and the excitement of like an Ole Miss home playoff game would be just an enormous thing. And people, you can't stop them from unofficially visiting.
And think about the timing of that. That is like a week before or the week of early signing period. So, man, you're talking about a huge time where everybody, you know, 80%, I think it's 80% of Power 5, at least, schools sign, you know, about 80% of their class on early signing period. So you can imagine that's a huge time where you have coaches going in home for stuff, and then you get a playoff game on your campus.
Oh, and I was a four, let's say I'm a top 100 recruit and I'm making up my mind. Let's just say I'm from Mississippi, but I'm kind of leaning to Georgia, but Ole Miss is having a playoff game this Saturday night. I am going over there anyway, and I am walking slowly through the Grove with easily identifiable shirts and stuff, and just having everyone throw money at me.
Yeah, just
like they're gonna like I'd
just
carry
walk through with a basket like at a church and have everybody donate.
Or like that, you know, seen that Italian fest they have in The Godfather where they're all pinning the dollars on the.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, like that. One of those things. You carry a big thing, pin on here. Yeah, maybe I'll come. I mean, because the fans are going to be so excited. They're just throwing money at you. And then you're sitting over there, Kirby Smart, while grinding tape, preparing. You're going, I'm going to lose the recruit. He just made 55 grand walking through the Grove.
Right.
All right. Big noon kickoff is Saturday in Iowa City for the Iowa versus Michigan game. Most of the fans obviously will be Iowa nice, but there will be some Michigan fans there. And also there is Urban Meyer back from, now it's not the first time he has done a Michigan game for Big Noon kickoff, but it's the first time since the disaster in Jacksonville. Big Noon kickoff, there was a report that they had banned Urban Meyer signs. That's not technically true. They ban inappropriate signs.
Of which I'm sure there are many.
Yes. Is it inappropriate to have a picture of Urban just enjoying himself out one night at at his bar in Dublin? Like, what is inappropriate and how good could this get?
Oh, it's
Michigan
gonna be
fan has no, like, you named your bar 7-0, right? It's not like you didn't troll them. Like, If I'm a Michigan fan going to that game, I'm gonna push the envelope on this old inappropriate sign business, right?
Like, if you are the Fox people in charge of policing inappropriate signs, like, you're calling for backup already.
Tough job.
You know,
tough
like,
job.
Holy moly, we need help, because it's going to be like whack-a-mole. You know, get one here, get one there. Oh, there's another over there. There's another over there. I mean, good luck.
I don't know. Will there be a scene? Will there be a scene? I guess we'll find out.
I'll be there, man. I will be there checking the scene, surveying the scene.
Will you please? Yeah, we need the real thing. Go to the Big Noon kickoff and see what they've got.
Yeah.
Signs.
Report live.
No signs about Urban Meyer policy is not a real thing. Just generally inappropriate. But it's like most of the inappropriate signs would just be a reflection of his behavior.
Well, I mean, again, yes. He's given people some material, you know?
Like when they say, you know, like so-and-so like Nickelback, that may not be actually true. Or, you know, they have different things, right? Sort of standard ones where they make fun of the coach. But this would be just, I'm a big fan of Urban. This was the picture I found.
Just happened to be in a bar bring a lawyer. Grinding on some woman.
Bring a lawyer. All right. Pat, you spent part of your morning. I tried to steer you clear of this in the group chat, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of listening to your attorney, you spent the morning listening to the NCAA's vaunted crack investigative body, judicial body. What is it? The IARP?
The IARP.
IARP. On the Memphis Tiger basketball program. This is so slow. It does not involve Derrick Rose, but it might as well. It involves whether or not Penny Hardaway helped pay for James Wiseman, who's starting his third year in the NBA and has already won an NBA championship and probably could care less, helped him move, paid the moving expenses from Nashville to Memphis so he could finish high school and eventually play it. Three whole games for the Memphis Tigers. It took 3 years. Was it 34 months?
34 months.
To figure out a moving bill.
IARP.
What? Now, nobody cares about this. Nobody. The penalties were nothing, including the NCAA. Nobody cares. But take us through this nonsense that it took 34 months to come up with nothing happened.
Okay.
Even though it kind of did. But nobody cares.
Like, well, the people in Memphis care, and so do the people in Louisville, Kansas, Arizona, and LSU, who are next on the IARP docket. Okay. So those folks...
Next year.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Louisville, I think, is coming very soon. The others, who knows? But this was unbelievable. Like, Dan, you and I have covered, I don't know, 9 million NCAA infractions cases. I have never seen the accused university run a dunk line on the enforcement and adjudicative bodies like this. Not even when North Carolina got away with decades of academic fraud.
Yeah, it's still the gold standard.
It is in terms of the stakes. Like, the stakes weren't as high for this one. But this, the IARP, which was devised, you know, coming out of the big scandal and was Condoleezza Rice's commission and all that business, will go down in history as one of the biggest follies, in my mind, maybe the biggest folly in NCAA history, which is saying something. But this is the IARP and the complex case unit absolutely getting routed, mocked, and coming up with nothing. This was so nonsensical, this hearing or this teleconference today to discuss the ruling. They said, we found significant issues that Memphis, significant violations from Memphis. The penalties are the $5,000 slippery noodle fine, right?
So yeah, bar night at the slippery noodle.
Bar night at the slippery noodle for the NCAA.
Love staff. The slippery noodle.
Yep.
Always, yeah. But say the staff goes to slippery noodle on the fine.
Yeah.
And gets absolutely hammered.
That's what they do with the
fine. We don't know that that's true, but we believe it.
It
we
should
believe
be
it to
true.
Be true.
And then there is
an investigative body is investigating it.
Yeah. A 3-year probation and that's it.
Oh yeah.
And so there were significant failures by the institution. Yeah. And that's the result. That is it. I mean, it's an astounding disconnect here. But a couple of things that stood out that they put in print, actually, for us. One, they said that Penny Hardaway did not know that James Wiseman, his best player, had been ruled ineligible, and that's why they played him. Do we really think the head coach did not know his best player had been ruled ineligible? Like, oh, yeah, no. I mean, there was the guy I asked him.
Nobody told him?
Nobody told him. Nobody told him. The 24 to 72 hours before that, a lot of things were going on at a different level that wouldn't necessarily involve the head coach, said the head of this ruling body. Really? Really? Your 7 foot five star superstar freshman is ineligible and that word never got to the head coach. Okay, sure. Then there was this. One of the assistant coaches wiped the hard drive on his laptop the day after they were told to preserve their laptops and all communication devices.
Totally normal behavior.
Heady play.
Yeah, right.
Very
normal behavior. The NCAA determines this, asks Memphis, hey, we'd like to find out what happened. Memphis shoots back this stiff arm. Nobody at the university was involved and nobody was aware of it. And that's it. They didn't do anything else. And the NCAA was like, okay, all right, thank you. And that's it. The assistant coach faces no show cause penalty, no nothing. This is like unbelievable. Like they just, the NCAA came in, and this actually, I keep saying the NCAA, this is the IARP, which did not know what it was doing, okay? The complex case unit did not know what it was doing, and they marched in and just absolutely got body slammed back out the door here. Amazing.
Pat, that's the IARP. There's probably a lot of people who listen who don't know what that is. It's an outside group of lawyers, basically, right?
Me, yeah.
Right. It's Dan.
No, it's an outside group that they literally brought in to get away from these kind of rulings.
Yeah.
Like, again, I don't care. James Wiseman, you know, whatever, right? He played three games. They moved him in. Yeah, whatever. But there were rules that the NCAA supposedly cares about. They killed the guy's college career. We didn't get to watch James Wiseman play at Memphis. The NCAA deemed these stupid rules, whether someone paid a moving company to help a family move, so important that they literally said, we'd rather not have one of the best young, most exciting basketball players in the country play for us. They, like, everyone else is trying to be in business with guys like James Wiseman. And the NCAA is like, no, we take these rules too seriously. We need to know how you moved. You and your family moved. Is that an extra benefit? I mean, kind of, but have you ever moved? It sucks. Okay, moving is not... Like here's the Lamborghini. Yet then they can't. So they bring these guys in basically to call BS on all of these dumb, because you need someone to just be like, give me a break, man. You raced it the day after, you're guilty. This totally happened, right? That was the whole point.
Right. Yes.
And yet, because you had too many, like, on the committee would be like some associate AD, and they're looking to actually get a job in that conference. And like, there was a lot of political maneuvering going on. Like, if you're associate AD on the committee and you're at, or an AD on a committee and you're in Conference USA and you're going against an SEC school and you bump into someone powerful from the SEC at the Fiesta Frolic and they're like, hey, yeah, you know, we might be good for that, that job that would pay you three times more and get you to the... Right, that was kind of one of the concerns. So we're just going to bring in people, be like, "This is BS," and yet they can't do it. What a weird, weird idea. I mean, this is all over. They're done with their rules.
Yeah. Well, there's four cases still in the IARP pipeline,
and they should be hammering these guys. They're so guilty.
Yeah, you know, they're totally guilty. This one, fine. Like, okay, if they decided Penny Hardaway was helping out a bunch of kids, if that is a booster, fine. Okay, and so this is not a violation. But the shit of like wiping the laptop and getting away with it and trying to convince everybody they didn't know they were playing an ineligible player. Oh, come on.
No assistant coach knows how to wipe a laptop by himself.
No, they don't.
Okay. Basketball coaches can only coach basketball. They can't even mow their own lawns. They don't know how to do anything.
That was another, there was one other thing in there, and I'll leave this subject alone, but like they interviewed a bunch of Memphis players and all of them, but one came in without his cell phone. They, you know, the question, we would like to look at your cell phone, and all of them but one's like, oh, I don't have my phone. How many college kids go anywhere without their cell phone?
Yeah, zero.
So all of them march in, and then the NCAA, the IARP comes back and says, we'd like to find out about that. And they're like, Memphis is like, well, you didn't ask the kids why. We're done here. See ya.
Good for them. Yeah. Good for them. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's what an amazing disaster coming up with this idea was.
It was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, they've had a lot of failures through the years, but this is an all-timer. All right, I want to get to we're going to pick up games on Race for the Case later in the week. We'll get into more of the nuts and bolts of football. It's a really good weekend. There's a ton of like interesting games this weekend in week five. But hopefully the IARP is not investigating this scandal. Now this is the ongoing saga that we have told you about. We were on it early. We were on it early. Comes from the competitive chess world, the Champions Chess Tour. We have an update on the big story. So if you've not been following along, okay. There's a guy named, I'm just going to go with one name to try to help. Magnus Carlsen. He is the world chess champion. He's the big dog of the chess world. Yep. He's the man. Magnus had a match against this guy, Hans, who's the young American player, who is the upstart because he's gotten really good in his rankings recently. But Hans has been accused of taking beads with electronic pulsing in them. Pulsing.
I laugh every time.
These would be kind you'd find at your adult shops, apparently. And putting them in a place where you would, some people do want these beads. I don't. Do your own math there, okay? Stuffing them in a place and then having a partner. So he would sit down at the chess match and a partner would be remote with the remote control. And you can turn up the bead and turn down the bead. And he would be the partner, he or she, would be playing the same game as Hans, but on a computer program on artificial intelligence. And then the computer would tell the perfect move. So then Hans, they would send like, you know, some kind of Morse code thing.
The old Morse code.
The old Morse code,
beep, beep, beep,
it would
beep,
buzz
beep,
in
beep,
the dot, body dot, cavity. Dash. Yeah. Body cavity, and then he would move the rook to the right spot, and then he started going on this epic success streak.
The horsey, so, right, Dan?
The horsey would the move.
Horse. The horsey. You made a ton of friends by calling it the horsey. Because all these people who listen to us, most of them I don't think play chess, and they're like, yeah, we thought it was a horsey too.
The horse, yeah, the horse. You got the soldier, the priest, yeah. The castle, right? The castle.
Right.
Anyway, so there was a big controversy that he cheated to defeat Magnus. Then Magnus had a rematch. They had a rematch, and Magnus resigned after one. He just quit the game, resigned after one play, and walked off. It seemed to be a statement, but he didn't really say it. Magnus has released a statement. Dear Chess World, which I think I'm part of now. I think we're part of the chess
world. We all are. Us with our look, we've brought in a big audience now. Come on. Big new audience for chess.
He made the unprecedented professional decision to withdraw from the tournament. That's what he said. Against Hans. Oh, after his round three game. Okay, because he thought Hans cheated. Then he resigned after playing one move. Okay, so he understands his frustration. So he goes, I believe that cheating in chess is a big deal and an existential threat to the game. I would agree with that. I also believe that chess organizers and those who care about the sanctity of the game we love should seriously consider increasing security measures and methods of cheat detection for over-the-board chess. Now, are we going to have to do body cavity searches at the chess match?
Yep.
And who the hell is signing up for that duty?
You get the people that do do the drug testing for USADA and WADA. I mean, they sit there and watch people go to the bathroom, so they can handle this too.
Yeah, what a job.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, okay, TSA level stuff. I believe that Neiman
has cheated more and more recently publicly admitted. Neiman admitted cheating at like 14 in some online game, and it's still dogging him. So never admit it. To be like Memphis. His over-the-board progress has been unusual, and throughout our game in the Cinquefield Cup, I had the impression that he wasn't tense or even fully concentrating on the game in critical positions while outplaying me as Black in a way I think only a handful of players can do. This is a tremendous line. A, huge self-brag. Only a few people can do this. But how about that? Right. He's looking across, and this guy's pulling these expert moves, and he's just like smoking a
pulling them out of his ass, you could say. Even.
Yeah, he's
playing out his ass. That.
So there we go. Magnus, it goes on. It's quite a statement. The chess world is appreciative of this. He is not willing to play Hans Niemann in the future. I hope the truth of this matter comes out, whatever it may be. So that is our update. So we will not get another.
Who's the dude that fired back? Somebody fired back at Magnus, though, right? Saying, look, you better bring some
proof. I did not have that. What?
Yeah.
There's more?
Roy Delfino, who I don't know who he is.
Well, we don't know any of these people.
Yeah.
We don't even know what the pieces on the board are.
Roy Delfino, if you have evidence that he cheated, you should present that evidence. You're destroying this kid's career based on nothing other than shady insinuations that you won't back up. The only evidence you offer is flimsy conjecture. Either prove he's cheating or apologize. Now, what we have here is the chess version of Nick Saban saying that Jimbo Fisher bought his recruiting class, and now Jimbo is Roy Delfino firing back saying, prove it, big boy. I mean, this is beautiful. We thought we had good stuff in football. They're replicating it in the chess world.
I don't want to see the proof.
No, you probably don't.
Well, the Jimbo and Nick game is coming up, and there's been no proof. We'll see. Maybe he backs down. I want to see these two play. Like, if they play now, I'm going to watch. I don't know what will go. I will not be smart enough to understand what's going on, but I will want to watch. ESPN, come on.
Let's go.
Poker. I mean, if they turn poker into a thing, let's get chess.
Right.
Chess
put it
world.
In the octagon. Let's go.
Right in the middle of the octagon.
Yeah. I'm all in. I'm on the chess email mailing list now. It's great.
Oh, that's how you're getting all this information. All right, one more ongoing saga here. If you remember, longtime listeners, it was last year at some point the hip hop star Pusha T came out with a diss track of McDonald's. He wrote a song that dissed the Filet-O-Fish, called it the Filet-O-Diss or whatever. Memorable lines. There's another conflict that we just need to bring to your attention. So Pusha T and his brother helped write the jingle "I'm Loving It," which obviously has been played 1 billion times. Probably this week on, who knows? It's the longest running slogan in McDonald's history.
Takes two people to write a 3-word jingle? And like, did one of them write two words and the other one wrote the third?
Let's just put it, not every single person that heard this went with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how they write these things. But Pusha, I think there was more than just them. But Pusha admits he was young and he did not quite grasp how to get a contract appropriate on this, so they just got paid like a flat fee, and now they've watched like the royalties are worth, you know, good lord, who knows, right? Mm-hmm. The biggest companies in the world, they play your song for like 20 straight years and you didn't make any money. So Pusha has got a lot of pun intended, I guess, beef with McDonald's, and last year decided to pair up with Arby's to make fun of the McDonald's Filet-O-Fish. The most memorable line to me was, how can you trust a square fish? That spoke to me. And we played the song numerous times on the show. Well, Pusha's back. So we want to end it with the musical stylings of Pusha T. Pusha is attacking the McRib now.
Oh, right.
The McRib. Arby's has a new real country style rib sandwich coming out. There's also a limited edition supply of merch, bolo ties, trucker hats, and shirts.
Why does anybody real country want rib sandwich merch?
I mean, who knows? I don't know.
Come on, man.
So Pusha is back. He's calling this the rib roast against the McRib. I have not had a McRib in many years. Is the McRib bad? I don't think so.
You think a square fish is fishy, though? But, I mean, a McRib with – these are ribs with – there's no ribs. There's no bones in them.
No,
boneless rib.
But, man, you get the onion and the pickle with the barbecue sauce.
Not that bad, right?
I'm a fan. I'm not going to admit.
Sean Anderson, our producer, our last Sean producer, has had every fast food sandwich ever. If you had the McRib or this Arby's rib thing.
I'm deep in the McRib game.
Okay.
Yeah. I am. I have to admit it.
McRib Team fan. McRib. Will this get you? Will this rib roast get you to want to try the Arby rib sandwich here? The country rib.
I've been a little cold on Arby's, but I'm a sucker for a good gimmick. So Pusha T really in this song can get me over there. Well, maybe I'll check it out. All right.
Well, play the song because I'm not Pusha T. No. Pusha T's better with the words than me. So let's play the song and we'll hear what he's got to say. The rib roast. Oh, it's got the country, like the old Western gunslinger thing.
They call me when it's time to do damage. When the quality ain't up to my standards. That McRib falls below average. Replaced by the country style Arby's rib sandwich. Straight out the smokehouse, Texas my old route. 8 hours to slow cook, keep push for the rollout. The boss with the smoky Q sauce. The real country style, make rib get lost. Yeah, this doesn't compare to that replica rib patty. I'm screaming, how dare you? You know that I'm war ready. Arby's taking taste to the next level. Arby's is the choice when you won't settle. McDonald's, what you selling? Mystery meat? Pop up and go away. What's history teach? Mickey D's, McRib. You ain't it in the streets. The real country style rib sandwich here to compete. Look, straight out the smokehouse. Country style Arby's rib sandwich, what you know about? We coming straight out the smokehouse. McRib, you just look like a clown, and that's with no doubt. This is a paid advertisement by Arby's.
Straight out the smokehouse. Straight out the smokehouse by Pusha T.
Very aggressive. Very aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, mystery meat. Yeah. I don't know. I'm loving this.
I'll try it. But again, a rib sandwich with no ribs in it makes me wonder how are they compressing the meat together? And I agree with Pusha on that. Mystery meat. So I want to see what the Arby version looks like here.
All right. Well, there we are. Pusha's back, and we love fights. So the coaches aren't fighting enough this year. We're just going to keep doing Arby's punching above its weight. And Pusha T, keep up with the great music. Pusha T. He has a new album out. It's Almost Dry is what it's called.
Okay.
Number one on the Billboard album chat. Might have to check that out. All right, we'll be back later in the week with actual football picks and all of that and more. We'll get more details as the week goes on. Appreciate everyone listening. We will talk to you later.